This is CICK News. Today's news will sound a little different than most of the news I produce for CICK. Yesterday was International Stuttering Awareness Day, and I spoke to Anne Desplanches, a woman who has a stutter and who is advocating for awareness about people who stutter. One of the points that she made in the following interview was about diversity in voices in the media, and that stutters are one of the way that we, the media, and likely you, the listener, measure success or professionalism. Do I speak clearly, without filler words, long pauses, or syllables that I tripped over? If so, then I must be a total professional. But let's face it, that's not how most people speak. And for those people who speak with a stutter, this idea that their stutter would limit their potential to sound professional is quite frankly prejudice. So I was inspired to keep this interview as raw as possible. I only made a few edits in hopes to share a diverse voice that might be overlooked typically in radio, broadcasting, and media. If you want to learn more about stuttering awareness, go to isad.live.
Yes, my name is Anne Desplanches. I'm 35 years old, and I'm originally from France. And yeah, my speech isn't always fluent. I live with a speech difference called stuttering.
Okay. So first off, thank you so much, Anne, for taking the time to speak with me. It's funny because I do know you as a radio host first. And so I hope that there's some comfort in that. I know that you are that you have radio experience. So thanks very much for coming on and speaking with me today.
No, thank you so much for having me and showing interest in the diversity of voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of diversity, yesterday was International Stuttering Awareness Day, or sometimes just shortened to ISAD, and it takes place every year on October 22nd. And I was just wondering if you wouldn't mind if we could start by you just telling me a little bit about what your experience has been as a person who stutters, both positive and negative, if you can kind of touch on both experiences.
Yes. So stuttering has been part of my life since childhood. And for a long time, I experienced it mostly as something painful, something that made it harder to connect with people, but also constantly made me feel vulnerable. So my self-esteem was deeply affected by it, and in many ways still is. And I have a particular type of stutter that is called covered or masked stutter. Mm-hmm. So that means I often try to hide it. I will rephrase sentences, switch words, or sometimes choose silence to avoid blocking or not to face any discomfort or vulnerable moment. So on the surface, that can make me sound quite fluent, but underneath, there's a lot of tension and effort to try to stay in control. But over time, and thanks to speech therapist and the amazing stuttering community that is out there, I have learned to accept it as part of who I am. And I will say that it made me a better listener. Mm-hmm. Because I know what it feels like to struggle to speak. So I pay closer attention to others, not just to their words, but to their silence, their emotions, and the things that are left unsaid. It has also given me an empathy. I can recognize vulnerability in others because I live with it every day, and I think that has made some of my relationships deeper and more authentic. The most important thing he has taught me is resilience, like to keep speaking even when it's hard, to keep showing up, and to know that my voice, with all its imperfections, still deserve to be heard.
Yeah, that's thank you so much for sharing that, because that is an incredibly vulnerable position to have that I think many people who don't have a stutter would definitely I think people can associate and empathize with think doing a lot of thinking before you speak, but we think of that as more for psychological reasons. But yours is not only psychological, it's also physical. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yes, totally.
Now you said that you had a masked or covered stutter, that's how you'd categorize your stutter. But I guess, can you tell me what some of the other types of stutters are, or what even stuttering is, and maybe even what causes it, if you know?
Yes, so stuttering is a speech disorder that affects the motor aspect of speech production. So to say it simply, someone who stutters knows exactly what they want to say. It's just that their speech system doesn't always cooperate as smoothly as most people's. There is a common misconception that stuttering is caused by stress or nerves, but it's not. You can stutter. Well, I mean, I do stutter even when I'm completely calm, relaxed, or happy. Like excitement can amplify stuttering. Of course, stress can make it a bit harder, but really it's not the root cause. And recent re research have found that stuttering is actually a neurological and developmental variation. So that means it's linked to how the brain develops and coordinates processes involved in speech. So things like timing, movement, rhythm. So knowing that, we can say that stuttering is not a disorder to be fixed, but rather a natural difference in how some people's brains produce speech.
How can you feel, and maybe not only yourself, but people who do stutter, who experience stuttering, how can the community be more supportive of that, or feel, or how can you feel more supported, I guess? What do you need when it comes to interacting with the public that maybe something that you realize until you've kind of defined your stutter to someone, or a little bit more about stuttering that you find people really take for granted. So how can you feel more supported interacting with the public, and what can the public be more aware of?
Yeah, but thanks for this question. I wish I was asked that question more, but for me, support starts with listening, like really listening without interrupt, without interrupted or rushing to finish my sentence. my sentences or any people with a stutter's sentences. We live in a world that moves fast, especially when it comes to communication, and there is time pressure for everything, and that pace can be really stressful. So yeah, that's my first that's the first thing I want to share, and the second one is I find that we often associate perfect speech with excellence, as if fluency automatically means intelligence, confidence, or leadership. So when someone stutters, people sometimes assume the opposite, that they are nervous, unsure of themselves, or even less capable. I do believe the media has both a responsibility and a unique power to reflect the real diversity of how people speak and express themselves. And most of what we hear or see in the media is edited, like polished to perfection. There's very little room for disfluency or stuttering. And if I may share an experience I had about 4 years ago, I was invited to Radio Canada studio in Vancouver to talk about my work at the time. And the interview was in French. And I stuttered a lot during that interview. And I felt incredibly ashamed and guilty and unworthy of being there. And I could also sense the journalist's discomfort. And at the end of the interview, we both rushed to wrap things up, and we both fully agreed to edit the segment, to polish and smooth out my broken voice. And looking back at this moment, I think we were both judging. I judged myself for how I spoke, and she, as a journalist, was judging my speech through the lens of fluency. And together, it was a together thing, we decided to varnish over what we saw as imperfections. And I think in doing so, the message itself, the story I was there to share, completely stopped mattering, and the focus shifted entirely to how I spoke, not what I said. And yeah, that experience really stayed with me. And it just remind me that beyond the media, we all have a role to play in creating in environments like in schools, workplaces, communities, where different ways of speaking are welcomed without judgment. Yeah, when stuttering is seen as a natural part of communication, not a flaw to fix, we can build a society that listens with more patience and understanding.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for sharing that anecdote. It's so nice to have it's nice to have a real world example too of like you said, like just it being seen as this flaw. And I mean, as a journalist who edits, so often people when they're done, they're like, oh my gosh, please edit that. I didn't get to my point, or I this or that or whatever, and I do. And sometimes the bulk of my work is not editing for context, but actually editing out what, yeah, up until, I'm not even kidding, this moment, I would have also considered to be flaws. And I really feel like my eyes just got opened.
Yeah, I know. And it's not just you. Like, I was part of that game too. It's only since recently that I want to advocate for that diversity. But I was so ashamed of my imperfections in the past that I completely understand that we would like to edit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now I would love to advocate for a change too.
So it's funny because you kind of, you've sort of touched on this a few times now in the interview, but I just wanted to, yeah, just understand a little more about, because you're bilingual, your first language is French, correct?
Yes.
And so as someone who's bilingual and you have a stutter, where is there sort of, how does that feel? Not only speaking two languages, but also experiencing stuttering in both languages as well. But when you're speaking English, your second language, that just feels like a whole nother layer to kind of for your mind to have to gotta like whatever, like, you know, like kind of go through the maze to communicate. So how does that feel, and what's that experience like?
Yeah, so for me, my stutter is about the same in both languages. It just doesn't always happen on the same words, but that's because each language has its own rhythm and sound patterns. So yeah, the moment where I get stuck can shift depending of what I'm saying. But what really changed is how I feel when I speak in English. So English, as you said, is my second language, and I carry a lot of linguistic insecurity. I'm way less confident in this language. So it makes me hold back or stay silent more often than I would maybe in French. So yeah, it's not that English triggers more stuttering. It's that my confidence level affects how freely I let myself speak. Mm. And by the way, I have to say, I'm not defining myself as bilingual. I learned English too late in life to feel at home in it, if that makes sense. So I believe I function fully in English, but I still feel like an outsider linguistically.
Is there a term that you would prefer then, other than bilingual? Is there, or would it just be that you speak English, you speak French? Like, is there kind of like a maybe a more attuned way for me to even ask that question?
I like the ESL designation, English as a second language. Mm-hmm. And I like to say French is my native language, mm-hmm. or mother tongue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess we kind of touched on this a little bit, but just to maybe sort of round out this really, honestly, this has just been a really highly informational and also just heartfelt, actually, conversation. So I really appreciate you doing this. But
no, thank you for giving me the opportunity. Like, my goal is to educate and bring awareness. Yeah, mostly bring awareness on people with a stutter lived experience, really.
If I could just ask you if there's anything that I didn't, that I haven't touched on, that it's sort of an end note that you think would be good for our listeners to understand or to take away from this interview?
Yes. I want people to see stuttering as a form of diversity, not a defect. Great leaders can stutter. And I invite everyone to watch the movie The King's Speech with Colin Firth about the King George VI and his first wartime radio broadcast upon the Britain's declaration of war on Germany. It's an incredible movie. And another thing I would like to share about stuttering is that one of the main things is its variability. There's no clear pattern. And some people might wonder, she hasn't stuttered during this whole interview, but it depends on the context. The people, like, there's really, there's no clear pattern, and that doesn't mean I don't know how to say it, but yeah, this variability piece is so important. Stuttering can change from one moment to the next, and a person might speak smoothly in one situation and suddenly get stuck in another. And yeah, there's nothing to understand. It's just this variability piece.
And thank you so much for speaking to me tonight and taking the time to shed a little light on a topic that I don't really feel gets spoken about very much, and certainly I haven't heard too much of it in the media. So I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing what you've experienced.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. And again, thank you for having me. And I deeply appreciate that CICK that is willing to share the voices of people who stutter. And like we said, this week and especially tomorrow is International Stuttering Awareness Day, and it's a great day to raise awareness and celebrate the voice and experience of people who stutter. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. That was my nearly unedited raw interview with Anne Desplanches from her home in Smithers. Thank you very much to Anne for taking the time to speak with me and for sharing that vulnerability about living with a stutter as well. If you want to learn more, you can go to ISAD.live, that stands for International Stuttering Awareness Day, and you can learn about global awareness and advocacy that's happening in the realm of stuttering today. A new proposal in British Columbia, Bill 79, called the Protecting Minors from Gender Transition Act, aims to ban medical gender transition treatments like puberty blockers for people under the age of 18. The bill would also stop the use of public funds for such care. Beyond that, it would let parents sue for up to 25 years after treatment is given. Introduced by the One BC Party, the legislation is currently under debate and has not passed. If enacted, it marks a major shift in how the province regulates youth gender care. I spoke to Rashawn Greenlee, who organized a day of solidarity in response to MLA Hartwell's vote in favor of this bill. I requested an interview with MLA Hartwell to inquire about her voting in favor of the Protecting Minors from Gender Transition Act, as to why a lawmaker would support limits on treatments like hormone replacement therapy when similar medications are available to non-transgendered people for other medical reasons, and if her supportive vote truly reflects the values and views of the Skeena-Bulkley Valley region. MLA Hartwell was not available for comment by the deadline for this news story.
Hi, I'm Rashan Greenlees. I hold many hats, but today I'm here just as like a concerned constituent and citizen.
So this past weekend, there was a solidarity day about Bill 79 and the way that our MLA voted for it. Can you give me just the background of what Bill 79 is?
So October 8th of this year, there was a vote in the BC legislature, Bill 79, entitled Protecting Minors from Gender Transition Act. And it also was seeking the removal of gender reassignment surgery from MSP. So basic healthcare access for transgender people, as well as getting rid of any kind of transgender care for minors was what it was acting. Mm-hmm. And our MLA, Sharon Hartwell, voted for this bill, which, again, is just taking away life-saving medical option transgender folks. And so the Day of Visibility this past Saturday was just to show, hey, we don't agree with your vote in this, and you're not representing us as your constituents if you're voting for bills like this. Yeah. We were at the corner of Main Street and Highway 16, okay, along the highway with signs and flags, just with supportive messages like trans lives matters, yeah, and protect trans kids,
yeah,
and those kind of messages, because we really just want to put it out there that we value and accept transgender people. And overwhelmingly, people driving by were honking and waving in support. And so there's a lot of people here that agree with us and can also condemn the actions of Sharon Hartwell's vote with Bill 79. Actually, all of the conservative MLAs in BC voted for this bill, as well as the two 1BC MLAs. So that was a vote of 40 people for and only 48 against. So it was defeated, but by a tight margin.
Yeah.
Which is very scary, but we did have over 25 people show up with only a couple days' notice. And so that's really heartwarming to see that people care this much to drop everything and show up. Yeah. So whether that's just hormone blockers, very likely is what they're targeting. I don't know the whole scope of it, if it would include just counseling, if it would be surgery post-op. And also, this is gender medical care. Is accessible to everyone. People use it. Cisgender people who, you know, are balding will access it.
Yeah.
People who have low testosterone counts will have access to this. People who are going through menopause are predominantly the most people that use this kind of medical information. So to exclude only a small piece of the population is discrimination, and that's not okay for MLAs to be voting for.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really worrisome that people in positions of power are attacking this small marginalized group, mm-hmm, instead of addressing like real issues that are affecting wider communities all at large. Like, why create more problems when you could be solving problems?
Is this one of many, or the start of maybe how you see not feeling represented by your municipal representation, or are there kind of other circumstances or other instances where you feel that human rights are actually at risk?
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel not represented by our MLA or MP being conservative, and that's the way that our riding has swung. I have lived in Prince George, which has always been a conservative, or at least when I was there was a conservative riding, and also didn't feel represented and felt like they were working against human rights as I do now, maybe more actively even. And it's really sad to see that going, because if you're not working towards human rights and humans, what are you working towards?
So did you reach out to Emily Hartwell to speak to her about how you feel about this? Have you written to her, or have you drafted a public letter so that she understands how you feel directly, not from just maybe driving by and seeing or hearing about it on Facebook? But yeah, have you wanted to have direct contact with her?
I am working on that as the next step, but I wanted to do this in timing with the Williams Lake marching and to show in solidarity that it's not an isolated feeling. But I did meet with Sharon Hartwell in January and specifically talked about like the queer community, specifically trans people, and what it meant to support trans rights versus to attack trans rights. I would love people to understand that transgender people are people just like themselves, and what goes on with their transness has nothing to do with you. It's not your business. Don't be involved. You don't want other people being involved in your very personal and medical situations, yeah, so don't be involved in others.
As Rashan mentioned in our interview, the bill was narrowly defeated, but when searching for more information on this bill and without speaking to MLA Hartwell, I thought it might be prudent to share audio from BC Legislature's October 8th session, where this issue was brought up and later voted on. The voices you hear are Nikki Sharma, who represents the electoral district of Vancouver Hastings as a member of the BC NDP, and who serves as Deputy Premier and Attorney General of British Columbia, who does not support the bill, and also the voice of Vancouver Quilchina MLA Dallas Brody of the One BC Party in support.
Leader of the Fourth Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. World-renowned child advocate Christopher Elston has informed us that a private gender clinic in Vancouver is performing double mastectomies on healthy girls as young as 14 years old. 14. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Premier is this. How can he possibly allow this to continue?
Attorney General.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have to say this is another sad day in the BC Legislature when conservative politicians are trying to dictate what parents should be doing and decisions they should be making with love and support for their children. And we're picking on vulnerable children. Let me be clear about something. Health decisions, individual health decisions for kids are a protected right of parents to make with their doctor in the best interests of their children, not by governments and not by politicians. I want to also say something, that gender identity is protected under the BC Human Rights Code, and that was unanimously passed in this legislature. I also want to say, it's not a surprise that this is in the House now, that we debate these things, picking on vulnerable kids. We have a party in the opposition that decided their tent was so big that it included intolerance, racism, and hate. MLAs across the aisle are leaders in their community. And when they tolerate it in their party, they tolerate it in this province, and they bring it to the House. Mr. Speaker, we are a party that believes in human rights. We believe in defending the rights of all individuals to live a dignified life in this province and to be protected by our Human Rights Code. We believe that we shouldn't be picking on vulnerable kids and the decisions that their parents make with their doctors. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Member. Member has supplemental?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. Just this morning, I spoke with a father who's here today, who is fighting to protect his 8-year-old son. His boy was encouraged at school to believe he was actually a girl. Teachers used a new name and pronouns and kept it secret. Now, a psychologist is already discussing puberty blockers despite having never met the child. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier, what do you have to say to parents who are justifiably enraged by the reality that under your direction, schools are transitioning children behind their backs?
Attorney General.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Spreading disproven conspiracy theories to spread fear and misinformation that targets vulnerable kids when those decisions should be made by their parents with the love and support that they provide them and the doctors. I think I've spoken before about how we really disagree with this type of politics. And we're really sorry that to all those people out there and the families out there that are going through this and supporting their loved ones and the kids out there that are hearing this, I'm sorry.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.